From the deepest part of Tibet, friends, we have with us this evening in the studio the marvelous, the magnificence of the Maharishi Guru Yogi Abhay. He has been traveling throughout Africa in the many places, and he is now back with us to deliver his groovy thoughts and deeds. Maharishi, lay down your grooviness upon us, my.
Yeah, one more thing. In our quest to get around, do an end round around these social media tyrants and geeks and overlords, these pencil neck overlords, share this thing, will you? Share it. We'll have some links up on True Pundit as well. Do a quick story with the podcast embedded in it, and get it out there and share it if you find it valuable. If you don't like it, don't share it, obviously. You're free to do what you want. Don't be a robot just because I say something. I want independent thinkers out here. But if it's, you found value in it, give it to somebody you know. Help us grow. We need all the help we can get. We've had enough. We've all had enough. The Thomas Paine Podcast, the Big Wednesday Podcast, episode 47. Big Wednesday coming out on Big Thursday. Why? What's going on? Why did it come out on Thursday instead of Wednesday? And why do you call it the Big Wednesday Podcast? That's just the way we do things around here. You guys put up with an entire government apparatus that doesn't make any sense. So why? Give me a hard time about stuff. And we go round and round with rat. And another week we go round and round talking about rats and DC rats. And we thank the late, great Wolfman Jack for opening up the show. And we did something a little different this week. We rolled out the Big Wednesday podcast. This is why we call it Big Wednesday, because it was a Big Wednesday yesterday. We rolled out the Big Wednesday podcast on our subscriber-only platforms, patreon.com/truepundit and subscribestar.com/truepundit. We rolled that out last night. And the response has been gangbusters. And it went so swimmingly, I think we will probably do that again on a regular basis. Cut it loose there first, and then it can be released to the general population, as they say, when you're locked up in the joint. We'll release it to Gen Pop. But for right now, it goes out to Cell Block Pain first on the subscriber platforms. And you can get on there for about 25 cents a day folks are finding it well worth the cash for all the stuff we have in our intel stash. And I was happy with the way it played out, and the content that we'll play for you today. I'll probably just pick up that most of that show and just copy and paste it into here, because why should I have to talk twice? You already hear my voice is going. By Thursday, I got gravel. I'm talking like gravel. It's the way it is. Good thing I was never like a smoker or anything like that. I'd be like, what's going on out there, man? Anybody out there? The podcast is growing and things are going well, so we appreciate your support either way. But the best way to support us is right on those platforms. Right on the platform. Because that money comes right into us and we can spread it out and do all special stuff like that, like everybody else can. Everybody out there can clap for the Wolf Man by signing up and subscribing. The content of this episode 47 might be some of the best stuff we've done in the last year. I don't know. I get that warm and fuzzy feeling inside. I get that every now and then after you break a big story. After you break a story and you do a podcast or a story and you go back and read it 3 or 4 times and say, Jesus, what is going on here? What kind of story is this? And today's story is a story of intrigue, theft, mayhem, lies, graft, corruption that reaches the deepest bowels of Washington, D.C. and continues to tear at our nation's fabric, the fabric of the Constitution, the fabric of law and order, which is more than frayed at this point. We got Hunter Biden. We got Christopher Barr. We got Christopher Barr. What the hell's the difference? They're the same asshole. We got Christopher Ray. We got William Barr. Okay? I think this is it for Ray. I think this is the nail in his FBI coffin. His stuff has already made it to the White House, as you will hear yesterday, behind the scenes. I think he's done. This is it for him. And when you listen to this, this is something else. It really is. And I hope... I hope one day in history that everybody who's out there fighting for to preserve what's left of this country and the civil rights and constitutional freedoms and things like that, I hope we can win this battle against these people, against these sick fucking people, sick communists, man, from the media and everywhere else. And we're seeing this play out time and time again with other fake scandals, their fake riots, fake marches. I hope we can claim a victory when this is all over. Fake pandemics. But I've been talking about a protection racket on here for the last year, and then on the More Pain Show on patreon.com/truepundit and subscribestar.com/truepundit. 2 years, 2.5 years I've been talking about and explaining and defining how the protection racket works in Washington, D.C., and how it affects every one of us. This might be one of the crown jewels, this episode 47, of what I was talking about. We appreciate the folks who... excuse me. We appreciate the folks who give us this intel. High-ranking folks, and you know who you are out there. You're making a difference. You're putting your ass on the line by telling us this stuff, too. You don't got to worry about the pain man, the wolf man over here. So this guy is cracking me up. He keeps sending me messages saying, you're the modern day news wolf man, Wolfman Jack. Said, I'll take it. I was a big fan of Wolfman Jack. Guy's a pioneer. I'll take that. So if you want to clap for the wolf man, you know how to benefit us on those platforms. And what we'll do right now is a little house cleaning, and then we'll jump right in. I'll press the magic play button, and we will basically pick up where we started last night and left off. And your life may never be the same as far as what you think of D.C. Whatever you thought, it couldn't get crazier. It couldn't get more corrupt. Think again. What's up, guys? How you doing? I figure we'd do a special show tonight, which has many tenets of episode 47 of the podcast, but I figure, what the hell? I might as well just break it to you guys. You guys are the ones that give a shit. And then we'll put it out on the podcast later. I'll reskin part of this, probably put it out on the podcast later so I don't have to do double the work. And my voice doesn't have to do double the work. And we're dealing with some somewhat complex financial schemes that I think I've done, and I will attempt to do a decent job of breaking them down and simplifying them so you understand exactly what the hell I'm talking about. This one's one for the books. I mean, this is a crazy scheme having to do with Biden and Hunter Biden and the Bidens and Christopher Wray and the Attorney General of the United States and the FBI director. It's mind-boggling. Of course, nobody ever tells you this stuff because you're dealing with people in D.C. that are not honest with you. But anyhow, I figured that we'd do it this way. This might be the wave of the future, too. I have to be honest with you to offer stuff on the private platforms, Patreon and Subscribestar, first, and then roll it out later on the podcast format when you got something breaking. You know, there's a lot of things we're kicking around, but what the hell, we'll try it. It's a week before the election, and I'll put the information out. Don't worry, I'm not gonna, but I wanted to get it to you guys first. And so, the big Wednesday podcast, we kicked it back probably till tomorrow to get this out to you guys first. Let's just jump right into this. Hey, and thanks for your support on these platforms. It's a big deal. It's a big deal to us. On patreon.com/truepundit, subscribestar.com/truepundit. Thank you. Your membership has privileges and benefits, and this is one of them, and I hope it goes over well. As we try to tinker and experiment with new things. But one thing that is old hat to us is breaking news. I've been breaking news for a long time since I was just a little pain in the ass instead of an old pain in the ass. Anyway, I watched with great dismay last night an interview on Tucker Carlson between Mr. Carlson and a former Hunter Biden family associate, speaking like almost like a criminal cartel at this point, right? Talking about Chinese energy and talking about Russian oil and Hunter involved in this stuff and a whistleblower, a former business associate, Tony Bobulinski, and what he had to say was frightening enough. But our spin on it now, after conferring with our folks inside and outside certain buildings in certain cities, The story just got way more intriguing, and you're about to find out why. Let me lay some quick groundwork here. The interview last night touched on many things. It was a long interview, and I'm going to play a piece of that here to get things rolling for background, so you know what the hell's going on. I'm just not talking in circles, because if you are joining late and you don't really have a background in what I'm talking about, that's fine, because I think we do a good job of capturing it. What's going on here?
This song has been going around and around.
I think Hunter Biden's here. I don't know what the hell that is. Let's just go to China Joe. Whoa, China Joe. Story, the interview dealt with collusion. And Bobulinski said Hunter Biden represented a Chinese CEO in a deal to help Russia's state oil company. Of course, you know, Hunter Biden is the son of former Vice President Joe Biden. But Bobulinski said that Hunter Biden acted as the personal attorney for Yi Jianming, the chair of the major Chinese energy firm, in a deal to buy a 14% stake in a Russian state oil company facing U.S. sanctions. Of course, that company was Rosneft, the oil conglomerate, the state-owned oil conglomerate, one of the biggest oil companies in the world. A stunning accusation was made by Tony Bobulinski, former business partner of the Biden family, on Tucker Carlson's show. Bobulinski explained that he was to have been the CEO of a new firm, Sinohawk, that was to be a joint venture between CEFC, the Chinese energy company. And CEFC is the capitalistic side of the Chinese government. Also involved in the deal would be the Biden family, the entire family. My God. Bobulinski said he met with Joe Biden in 2017 to discuss the arrangement. However, the deal fell through, he explained, partly because CEFC tried to buy a 14% stake in Rosneft, the Russian state oil company. At that time, Russia faced sanctions because of its invasion of Ukraine and seizure of Crimea in 2014. And you're going to hear that from Mr. Bobulinski and some other details. So I don't want to spoil it for you. But the takeaway here, the setup of this, is that Hunter Biden was the personal attorney for the CEO of the Chinese energy firm. That's crazy in itself. On a merger and acquisition deal. We'll get into it here in a minute. I'm going to play this interview for you, and then I'll be back on the back end, and we'll do some audio-visual. Put some things up on the big board and take you through what I'm talking about. And it's unbelievable, really. A guy like Ray, I think this is bad for Ray. I think this is be the end of Ray after this podcast tonight. I don't see how this doesn't get spread around. The stuff we're going to break tonight, I don't see how it doesn't get spread around. We put it out tomorrow on the podcast, and we'll get it out the door, so don't worry about that. And do a story on it and True Pundit and see what we can get going. But I wanted to give to you guys first, and we appreciate you. And I hope, you know, this is the first of many situations where we can keep you folks happy. Let's go to the interview.
A series of suspicious overseas financial transactions that involved the former vice president's son. But their report did not tell the full story. There was a lot of money here, and a lot of it flowed to the Biden family. Where did it go, and where did it come from? We asked Tony Bobulinski that. Tell me about the money. So in the end, the Chinese did send quite a bit of money.
Correct.
Where did it go?
Documents were all executed, even after this back and forth, and the Chinese CFC Director Zhang, who's number three at the company, worked directly for Chairman Yi. And the way it was presented to me as a very senior Chinese Communist Party member, was assuring me that $10 million was being sent to our bank account that was set up at JP Morgan Chase to basically fund operations and grow the business. And that of that $10 million, we were capitalizing the business. So $5 million of that $10 million was being loaned to Oneida Holdings as a non-recourse loan from CFC. And the other $5 million was coming as CFC as their, you know, capitalization of the business, because we own 50-50 in the partnership. The Chinese and CFC never viewed me. I'm insignificant and irrelevant in this discussion. To them, it was always the Biden family. It wasn't Hunter Biden. It wasn't Jim Biden. It was the Biden family, who's obviously led and operated by Joe Biden. And in a document that you guys have, and I think it's been provided to, you know, to the world, the Chinese referenced that because of their trust in the Biden family, that Chairman Yi and Director Zhang are excited about moving forward in this. And in that document, they referenced loaning $5 million to the BD family.
Right.
The BD family is the Biden family. And notice they didn't say we're loaning that money to Oneida Holdings, or we're loaning that money to Tony Bobulinski, or we're loaning that money to James Gillier or Rob Walker. They, once again, not a document generated by me, a document generated by CFC, that they're loaning that money to the Biden family.
What are the implications of this going forward? If Joe Biden is elected president, which could very well happen, how does this constrain his ability to deal with China?
Are you asking for my personal opinion?
I am. I'm asking for your opinion as someone who's worked with the Chinese.
So I think Joe Biden and the Biden family are compromised. Obviously, I've referenced that I held a Q clearance. You're briefed on compromise and, you know, who you're able to talk with and deal and do business with. And I just don't see, given the history here and the facts, how Joe can't be influenced in some manner based on the history that they have where here with CFC and stuff like that. So as a citizen and an American taxpayer, I'm very, very concerned.
It seems at this point that there is so much documentation. And again, we have your documents, the ones that you retain, the text, the emails,
yeah,
and the legal documents. But presumably there are many others because there are a lot of other people involved in this. Is it possible that this stuff just disappears and nobody covers it for the next 4 years if Biden's elected? I mean, it seems like there's a lot of evidence out there.
I think the American people should be demanding that this is investigated. And I don't know what the right party to do that is. Is that the DOJ? Is that the FBI? Is that Congress? Is that the Senate? But there absolutely should be no scenario that this isn't investigated. And as you said, I probably have purview into 10%. Just picking a round number of what was actually going on. And I would encourage the American people to go online and download, you know, Senator Johnson's 87-page report after watching this and read pages 65 through 87 and form your own conclusion. What I've come forward with is a piece in that puzzle that Senator Johnson and Senator Grassley did not have. They didn't have it because I hadn't gone on record, and all this information and documentation was kept very, very tight. You asked me if the information disappeared. I would expect that other parties have probably destroyed or gotten rid of information. I didn't. I have every email, every text, every WhatsApp that was exchanged, and I've provided that to the authorities, and here I am discussing it.
So you learned from the Senate report that the Chinese sent a great deal of money, but it didn't go where it was supposed to go, correct?
Yes, that's correct. So take the American people back to July 2017. I was being told by Director Zhang, who's a senior executive at CFC, that the $10 million was going to be funded in two tranches of $5 million and $5 million. Once again, the way they were approaching that is $5 million was a loan to the Biden family, and $5 million was their contribution to capitalize Sinohawk Holdings. That money didn't come in June, it didn't come in July, and I was in Europe traveling with friends and family, and I was frustrated because culturally there's a tendency to, hey, it's coming, and it wasn't coming. So I was very frustrated. But also in July 2017, something that happened is over July 4th weekend, while we were celebrating our Independence Day, President Xi was in Moscow meeting Vladimir Putin on an official visit. And in that meeting and in that, you know, multiple days, Director Zhang was in Moscow participating in that. And Rosneft, or media in Russia, had leaked to the press that they were entertaining selling 14% of Rosneft, which is the state-owned, U.S.-sanctioned energy company of Russia, to CEFC. When I saw that leaked, you can imagine, once again, the clearance I held, the military background, sort of pushed away from the table like, whoa, this is stair-stepping things at a level that do I even want to be associated with, or do I even want to be near? Shortly after that information got out, I was told that Director Zhang's visa was denied. He could no longer get back into the U.S. for meetings or to, you know, bring his wife and his kids to go to school in New York, and that it was denied multiple times. Jim Biden confirms that in text. James Gillier references it. Kevin Dongwin Nguyen, who's the individual that's referenced in Senator Johnson's Senate report, he went by Kevin. His legal name is Dongwin Gong. And so I was sort of walking on eggshells, you know, what's going on? You're saying this money's going to be funded. It hasn't come in yet. I'm sort of near the end of my rope here. And then in September, easily validated, it's officially announced that CFC is buying 14% of Rosneft, once again, the state-owned energy company. And so at that point, I just sort of pushed away from the table. The money hadn't been funded into Sinohawk, and I was having daily discussions with James Gillier. You know, what's going on here? You know, the Biden name, Russia, China, I don't want to be anywhere, you know, near this. I got to understand all the moving pieces. And so we went into the fall of 2017, very well documented, when Patrick Ho, who's an employee or an associate of CFC, landed in New York. He was detained by the U.S. government and put in jail for corruption, apparently for leaving shoeboxes of cash to two African presidents. And it started this downhill spiral of CFC as a company. Remember, President Xi was traveling around the world under the One Belt, One Road. That was their political approach. And CFC was the capitalistic side of the Chinese government, doing things that they could do on the capitalist side that the government couldn't get done. It's very well documented, the work that CFC did in the Middle East, in Czechoslovakia, in Romania, Kazakhstan, in Georgia, all over the world. When they announced that that they were officially tendering for 14% of Rosneft, a deal valued at $9 billion, I sort of pushed away from the table like, okay, obviously that's taking priority over this discussion. I just sort of, was watching things play out once they detained Patrick Ho. I did reach out to Hunter Biden in October 2017, asking him, hey, listen, they haven't funded the $10 million. Have you done something that I'm not aware of? Have you gone around us? Have you started a parallel discussion with Chairman Yi that I should be conscious of? And in a variety of text messages that you've been provided, and I think the American people have been provided, he says, no, I didn't go around you, but oh, by the way, I'm acting as the personal attorney to Chairman Yi. Now imagine being in my shoes, looking at my phone, reading this text message from Hunter Biden. I just spent 6 months all out of pocket myself. Nobody was paying me. I was paying for my own travel, my own meals, my own cars, anything that was needed. And Hunter Biden is now telling me that he's meeting personally one-on-one with Chairman Yi in his $50 million penthouse in New York. And if he can't meet him, he's picking up the phone and calling him, but they only discuss things in person. You can imagine my anger and frustration there, because then I'm like, oh, this has gotten slippery. You have gone around me. What's going on here? And oh, by the way, Hunter, you're acting as the personal attorney to Chairman Yi while they're tendering for 14% of the Russian state-owned energy company, a deal valued at $9 billion? What am I missing here? And he sort of just plays it off. And he said, I'm working on a bunch of other personal things and visas and stuff like that, but doesn't go into a lot of detail. I'd love for you to ask him that. I'd love the American people to ask what those other special things were.
You've told your story in a very public way. What do you expect the consequences for you and your family will be?
So my focus right now is not the consequences on me. I'm actually trying to be selfless in this discussion. I think the consequences our country faces, that average American voter that's thinking about what presidential candidate they pick today or have picked over the prior 2 weeks or in the future all the way up to the election. I'm doing this for them, not for my family, not for any money. I'm doing this out of a patriotic duty to our country based on my military background and my grandfather's background. So other people can determine the facts and what matters and how they want to vote. But I had to go on record because they chose to sort of mar up my name. So I have a former SEAL team protecting my family. I'm not at home right now. And I'll travel the next 4 years if I have to. I had to do this.
Okay, so that video was a good starting point for background on this. it's rather damning talking about Hunter Biden being the personal attorney for this guy, this Chinese energy guy, while they're trying to purchase a 14% stake in Rosneft, a massive Russian state oil company. And Hunter Biden's the guy's personal attorney. Obviously illegal. And he was doing an end run around Bubba Linsky to make sure he didn't get paid. You know, that's the way the Bidens work. Yeah, listen to my previous podcast for the last couple of weeks. I laid out. Let's go into my teaching mode here. Let's go to the video. Use the teaching tool of video to help highlight what I'm talking about in this episode here. This is the benefits, guys, of you folks on patreon.com/truepundit and subscribestar.com/truepundit who have access to the video shows and the video podcasts. This is going to be obviously something good for you guys. So let's change here. And that's not good. Okay. We'll just go here. Cool. Back on May 28th, 2020, we dropped a podcast, episode 25, I think it was. Exclusive top FBI rat out Ray and bombshells are epic. FBI director who presided over multiple Russian FBI probes has millions in cash invested in Russia. And we, that's episode 25. The story's on True Pundit. The episode 25 is on the Thomas Paine podcast. Archives, which is thomaspainpodcast.com, is the easiest way to get there. Story says top brass in the FBI have ratted out their director, Christopher Wray, with shocking revelations detailing a string of alarming conflicts and millions of dollars of investments in, of all things, Russia. FBI's top agent has as much as $5 million in personal cash invested in varying sectors in Russia, according to details provided by FBI brass and documents obtained by Thomas Paine podcast and the More Paine show on Patreon, which folks get Tuesday nights, subscribers and of those platforms. And also troubling about Ray's investments in Russia, Ray has never removed himself from presiding over the FBI's Russia collusion investigation of President Trump, the Mueller probe into Russia interference in the 2016 election, Russian allegations in the bogus Steele dossier, Russian ties to the General Mike Flynn investigation, Russian advertising during the 2016 election, and criminal FBI cases involving and targeting Russian nationals and entities. So he's still in the mix with I think it's more like $6 million, what we call $5 million. With as much as $5 million of Ray's personal wealth tied up in conglomerates with Russian ties and beyond, why has Ray not divested his investments to rid himself of the blatant string of professional and ethical conflicts? And moreover, where is Ray's recusal from all things Russia in the FBI? In episode 25, we talk about where and exactly how Ray's personal money is invested. Now, Ray's worth, it's anywhere from like $30 to $40 million. I think it's more upwards of $50 million. So, and don't worry, the guy who was making, you know, $6, $7 million a year as a lawyer suddenly quit his day job and is making a couple hundred thousand dollars. That's not suspicious, is it? You'll see why. You'll see why. Another sentinel for the deep state. Let's talk about, we're going to set this up. So we're going to back to the video. Let's look at, here we are, back on the video. This is Ray's public financial disclosure report. This guy's got a lot of dough, as you will see. So we look here. Organization name, Filer's positions held outside the United States government. This was before his appointment to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. King and Spalding Law Firm, Atlanta, Georgia. Position held, a partner. From 2005 to the present, that was before his appointment and Senate approval to take over the FBI. So 2005 to the present. Filer's employment assets and income and retirement accounts. Guy's got a lot of money. Here's his retirement accounts and his assets. $1 million. Here's $1 million. King and Spalding LLP cash balance pension plan to $1 million. That's not bad, right? That doesn't include $250,000 in Russell 2000 ETF, BlackRock, another $250,000, Lord Abbott inflation, $100,000, $250,000 DFA U.S. large cap value fund. This is just his assets and income and his retirement accounts. He's got a whole lot more. Now, look at this. This is where it's interesting right here. With this highlight right here? Yeah, there you go. King and Spalding LLP partnership share. Earned income allocation from the law firm partnership, $9.2 million. From his law firm, okay? Earned income. Now, the next line, 15. King, right here, we're down on line 15. King and Spalding LLP anticipated return of paid-in capital. That's money he has paid into his law firm through the years as a partner. $5 million. Line 16, King and Spalding anticipated partnership share. Another $5 million. So you got 9 million. You guys out there who are busting your ass for a living can't even comprehend this. You got, neither can I. You got $9 million here. You got another up to $5 million here from King and Spalding and another $5 million. That's $19 million, $20 million, we'll call it. On top of the million he's got in King and Spalding cash balance pension plan. So you're talking about $21 million he's got tied up in this law firm. Massive, massive deep state law firm in Atlanta. Massive. And, you know, you can find this online, his financial disclosure. We'll just run through some of the people that he's represented previously. Filer's source of compensation exceeding $5,000 a year. In other words, some of his clients. He's supposed to list his clients that were over $5,000 a year when he was at King Spalding between 2005 and when he took over the FBI. So we got King and Spalding, Credit Suisse, Johnson & Johnson, Wells Fargo, Huntington Ingalls Industry, Chevron, SunTrust Banks, FanDuel, DraftKings. All you guys out there playing sports, this guy was their lawyer. Governor Chris Christie, he represented Christie and Bridgegate. Officer of Standard Chartered Bank, Georgia Pacific Corp, Medtronic PLC, Ameritox, PricewaterhouseCooper, Alcatel-Lucent, three confidential clients. Look at this. He can't even name it, okay? This plays into what we're going to be talking about. Legal services, names cannot be disclosed because they are subject to non-public investigations. That's usually criminal or SEC related. LifeCare, other places he's represented, LifeCare Centers of America. Another one confidential client. Illegal services, names cannot be disclosed because it's subject to a DC bar rule 1.6. Then he has stuff for the spouse, okay, and then they have other assets and income, right? You should see this thing. You should Google this. Take a look at it. It's crazy. Or DuckDuckGo. I'm sorry. People get upset when I say the wrong search engine. It's a tough crowd out there. Look at all the stocks. These are stocks, okay? I'll just scroll through these, and I won't say much. I mean, it's really something else. How much money this guy's got? $1 million. $1 million. $500,000. $5 million in MSC Eurozone ETF. a lot of this now, some of this, not a lot of it, but some of it, the major stuff, the big pops, the big players where he's got money was covered in podcast 25. When everybody else was asleep in the media, nobody picked up on it. We're on podcast 47 now. That was podcast 25. Do the math. That's like ancient history. May is ancient history. Look at all this. This guy is loaded. Why is he running the FBI? You just figure it out for yourself. I mean, look at these stocks. He's got a piece of everything. Everything. Has he divested himself? Even as a piss, yeah. I saw Citigroup and I thought piss. My former employer. He's even got a piece of Citigroup. I mean, there's hundreds of stocks in here. Has he divested these stocks? No. Has he recused himself from any cases involving these companies? No. Why? That's like small potatoes compared to what we're going to get into. I'm still, if you guys aren't following on video and you're just listening, when I cut part of this to be the podcast, the Big Wednesday, Big Thursday podcast, I'm still scrolling through all of his investments. That's what I'm doing while I'm talking. It goes on and on and on. And I'd sit here and list them all, but it's like ridiculous. He's got one liability. Pretty good, right? He's got a mortgage. A 3.8% rate. I don't know. I guess it doesn't really matter when you... He's got a mortgage and that's his only liability. $40, $50 million and he's got a mortgage for anywhere between $1 million and $5 million. You can't even. Anyway, this plays into what we're going to be talking about, but I wanted you to see this right here specifically. Let's double back this right here. Okay. Lines 14. Well, we'll say lines 10 through 16. Okay. But we'll skip a couple lines, but just for, to be all encompassing, lines 10 through 16. $21 million tied up in King and Spalding. It's pretty good. It's a pretty good haul for a young guy. This guy's my age. He's rocking and rolling, man. Jesus, God almighty. This is how players are rewarded in the swamp, guys. And we're about to tell you exactly what this has to do with Hunter Biden. And you can't even make it up. It's so insane. Now let's go here. Now we're jumping around a little bit here, but coming back to the video. This is Christopher Wray's personal biography. Okay. His profile page from his law firm before. This is important to note, before he became FBI director. And something very strange has happened here. Now, he joined that firm in 2005. So this profile was up on King & Spalding's webpage from 2005 until the time that he became FBI director. In late summer 2017. But I want to show you this. How did we get this? It's been scrubbed from the internet, by the way. So we went to the Wayback Machine, and we caught it. We dug it up 3 years ago. three, going on almost 4 years ago. Okay. So this is what he had before he was nominated to become FBI director. This is very interesting. To replace Comey. Right here. And this plays into what we're going to talk about too. In his bio, he has all of his accomplishments and who he represented and this, that, and the other thing. He has written, he represented an energy company president in a criminal investigation by Russian authorities. And this is what he wrote. It was in his bio on King and Spalding's page. Let me tell you what happened with this guy. You see it right there, right? I highlighted it. When Trump was, Trump wins the election, obviously, 2016. In January, when he was inaugurated, guess what happens? This line right here that says, and quote, an energy company president in a criminal investigation by Russian authorities, that line disappears. It's removed from his bio on the law firm's webpage. You know why? Because he was already in the running to replace Comey. I mean, it was only a matter of time before Trump got rid of Comey after his disastrous leadership of the FBI. Okay. What happens? This guy gets nervous with everything talking about Russia and he removes it from his bio. That's the only thing he removed. If you go look at his bio, I know we looked at it a while back. The only thing we could find that was changed was this line. That he represented an energy company president in a criminal investigation by Russian authorities. What does that have to do with anything I'm about to tell you? Before I forget, I want to mention this. If you look at Ray's 68-page questionnaire, he submitted to the Senate Judiciary Committee as part of his verification process to earn the votes to become FBI director. He submitted 68-page questionnaire and answers to it. Okay, so they look at this, all the questions, and they're supposed to investigate this guy. They didn't do it. As you're going to find out, as you found out in episode 25 of the podcast, he submits 68 pages. Okay. He lists, there's a section on there that says, do you have any potential conflicts of interest? No. He also fails to mention or list his previous Russian related client that we talked about. The mystery client, the oil client in Russia. He doesn't even mention that. Should have mentioned it. It's part of his confirmation process in the Senate. What does he also leave off? So now we have the guy deleting an important fact from his partner profile at King and Spalding, okay? Before, when he got wind that he could be up for FBI director, he goes in, he edits that out. He deletes it, okay? Then he doesn't tell the Senate anything about this previous Russian-related client with the criminal oil probe. You know what else he also leaves out? He doesn't mention any of his law firm, King and Spalding. Remember I showed you where he got all that money? Big money. He's not making $200,000. He's making millions. The $21 million linked to this guy. Doesn't even include his wife and his family. The law firm was paying them too. His kids and his wife all had money invested in it too. They had to divest themselves when he became FBI director. Where do you think this guy is going back to once he gets fired? Take a guess. King and Spalding, maybe? He also fails to mention to the Senate in his materials submitted for confirmation that his law firm, King and Spalding, represented a number of Russian clients and Russian state-run companies. There's nothing that says anything about Russia or Russian whatsoever in the materials that he submitted. Guess what one of those clients were? You can't even guess. Rosneft. King and Spalding represented Rosneft on a matter of, on a number of issues. You just heard Bob Alinsky talk about Rosneft. So let's get this straight. Okay. And Bob Alinsky is talking about a time frame in 2017, spring and summer 2017, before Ray was still at the firm. Ray was still at King and Spalding, okay, during this time. And previous to that, okay, Rosneft had many, many jobs, much representation from King and Spalding. For what? It's a state-run in Russia oil company. So what's going on? Why are they paying a law firm in Georgia? Why are they paying Ray's law firm? It's crazy. Okay, so let's just frame this real quick. Real quick, you have Bob Alinsky, who's saying that Hunter Biden represented the Chinese, the executive CEO, the chairman of the Chinese energy company, who was trying to scoop up a 14% stake in Rosneft, the Russian oil company, worth about $9, 10, 11 billion when you all add it up, according to different sources, right? And we'll get into that too, because this story gets even crazier. So you have Hunter Biden representing, legally representing, the CEO of this Chinese oil company in merger talks or merger and acquisition talks with Rosneft. And Rosneft has been and was at the time represented in merger and acquisition talks by King and Spalding, specifically their Moscow and London offices. Okay. So you have now, you have a link, a massive conflict of interest, obviously, at best, between the guy running the FBI and Hunter Biden, who are both on, presumably, one form or another, on opposite sides of the bargaining table, the bargaining process. Nobody knows about this. We're the only people that know about this right now. You're the only people that know about this besides all the players in D.C., right? This was leaked out to us. It's a big deal and confirmed. As I'm talking, I'll be throwing more stuff for your way, more documentation and things like that as we proceed here. But this is like a quick and dirty throwdown just to get it out the door because it's very pressing. So Tucker Carlson has this interview last night with Bob Alinsky, and Bob Alinsky's talking about insider schemes with Hunter Biden. And what Bob Alinsky doesn't say or know, perhaps, is that the other side of the bargaining table representing Rosneft, and I'll show you right now. I have it somewhere here. Representing Rosneft was Christopher Wray's firm. And Christopher Wray, at the time, was at the firm. You can't even... I'll show you exactly right here. We found this. I found this from King and Spalding. They have an energy newsletter. We dug it up. Let's go to the video. Back to the videotape. Here we go. Let's go to the videotape. Here it is. Okay. This is from King and Spalding. Regulatory competition law, Russia. Russia gives go-ahead to Rosneft's acquisition of TNK-BP. This is from 2013. Okay? King and Spalding was already representing Rosneft. And they're representing Rosneft in a previous merger and acquisition. The Russian Federal Service has cleared Rosneft's U.S. $65 billion acquisition of TNK-BP, subject to divestments and conduct remedies. The deal will reduce the number of major oil companies in Russia from 4 to 3 and arguably will make Rosneft the world's largest public oil and gas company engaged in the production of liquid hydrocarbons. And it goes on and on and on. This is from, okay, this is from King and Spalding. It says it right here. You see it right here? King and Spalding, right there. This is from inside their law firm. They had a energy and newsletter on what they were doing, what the firm, who they were representing, etc. It goes on and on and on in quite in detail about the transaction and the acquisition process, what the acquisition and transaction represents. And King and Spalding is representing Rosneft. Right here it says, copyright, King and Spalding. Up here at the top, you look at the date, it says February 6, 2013. Okay. That's 7 years after Ray joined the firm. February 6, 2013, Ray was at the firm. And these guys, King and Spalding, and Rosneft was spending millions of dollars to have these guys represent them. Now we're talking, we fast forward with Bob Alinsky. We fast forward to what? 2017, a few years later, and King and Spalding is still representing Rosneft, except this time across the table, you can't even make it up. Across the table is Hunter Biden as they discuss a merger and acquisition of the Chinese energy company wants to get a 14% piece of Rosneft, the Russian oil company, and Hunter Biden's in the negotiation process. And Bob Alinsky's out in the cold, as he told you, didn't even know what the hell was going on. Bob Alinsky's waiting for his $10 million, and these guys are cutting side deals. That Biden's cutting side deals and stabbing the guy in the back. And then Hunter Biden is across the bargaining table with a company that's been represented, with an oil company in Russia that's been represented by Christopher Wray's law firm. They paid multiple millions of dollars for representation. And guess what? The King and Spalding still represents Rosneft. So when Wray goes back to King and Spalding, Rosneft's still going to be a client. Maybe now it's starting to make sense. Or you could draw inferences. You know, the conflict of interest is not only proving that there's a conflict of interest, it's proving that there's an impropriety, proving that there is an appearance of impropriety, not just impropriety itself, but there's an appearance of something that could go very wrong. There's an appearance of a quid pro quo. The quid pro quo here is somewhat elementary. You could make an argument, does Christopher Wray sit on top of Hunter Biden's laptop for a year and not only do nothing, but categorize it, recategorize it as evidence of a financial crime? Listen to episode 46 of the Thomas Fain podcast as we lay all this out in detail. I'm not going to lay it out here, but the FBI did the Bidens a favor. They rigged the investigation of the laptop. It wasn't treated as it normally should be. And go into detail for an hour plus. I'm not going to do that here. We're moving fast. If you're hitchhiking here and you're new, I know it's tough to grab onto a car moving 90 miles an hour, but I'm asking you either to do that or head back to episode 46 and listen up. I think it's 46. Yeah, it's the last one we just did, I think. Yeah. And listen up on what I was talking about on how the FBI literally rigged the investigation. So why did they rig it? There's money involved behind the scenes. And if it's not, there's an impropriety, an appearance of an impropriety. That's a conflict of interest at best. At worst, these guys are all in bed together. I think you can come to your own conclusions based on the character of the people involved here. This guy, Wray, right here, I got his bio back up. He's director of the FBI. So he changes his bio to conceal things before he's nominated. And that's also during the nomination process when he's being vetted before Trump nominates him. You know, Trump's people and the lawyers and White House counsel look at all this stuff. He removed that line from his bio. His law firm, they also represent Gazprom in Russia. Okay, so it's not just Rosneft, it's Gazprom. They represent Sberbank and Alpha Bank. This is no joke, okay? King and Spalding has got their tentacles all throughout Moscow and Russia. And Ray, that money I showed you that he gets, that all comes from, whether he works on the cases or not, that all goes into his bank account and his family's bank account and his retirement accounts, etc. The Russian money that comes in. That doesn't even include the Russian money he has, personal investments we talked about that he has in Russia. So did Ray divest himself or recuse himself from any of these cases? No. Did he recuse himself from the Hunter Biden laptop? No. There's a definite conflict. I think it's probably it's borderlines on criminal. Okay. What I just laid out. And it gets even worse. But I think it borderlines on criminal. It's definitely enough to have this guy removed and investigated himself. And he's running the fucking FBI. And he's running around concealing evidence, hiding evidence. In his confirmation documents to the U.S. Senate, he doesn't mention any of this stuff. None of it. Says he has no conflicts of interest. No business in Russia. No links in Russia. What? And then he ends up in a deal. His law firm happens to end up in a deal where Hunter Biden is at the negotiating table representing a Chinese company. Okay? And Ray still doesn't do anything. Why? It's a fucking cover-up. What else was Ray doing? What else is his law firm into? Okay? Maybe he doesn't want to shine the spotlight on it because it'll cost him some of the big money I showed you guys. But it gets even crazier. Just when you didn't think it could get any crazier, it gets crazier. And we wouldn't even be able to put a lot of these pieces together if it wasn't for this Bobulinski guy. People have asked me, hey, is this Bobulinski guy for real? This is how we got here. So I'd say, yeah, he's for real. Let's switch back to the regular view. The story gets even crazier. Here's the deal. I forgot to tell you. Rosneft was facing massive sanctions in Europe and the United States. and it did cost them a lot of money. And King and Spalding, Ray's law firm, represented them during that too. It's, you can't even make it up. It gets even crazier. Okay. That's bad enough. Who knows how many millions of dollars these guys paid Ray's firm and how much money they put in Ray's pocket. I mean, this is when you start uncovering the corruption. It's just every layer of the onion you peel back, it gets worse and worse and worse. My God. Okay, so let's go to this real quick. We'll talk about it without overcomplicating an already complicated subject matter. I'll just say this, okay, just break down as fast as I can and as simple as I can, because it's, if your head wasn't spinning enough, can't even, William Barr, before he jumped back in as Attorney General, worked for a law firm called, Barr was an attorney at a law firm called Kirkland & Ellis, a massive law firm, one of the obviously biggest law firms in the world and in the United States. So Kirkland and Ellis were involved in this too. They were involved in trying to broker the deal between CEFC and Rosneft, selling the shares to brokering the deals to CEFC, and they were paid money. This was Barr's law firm. In 2016, 2017, before he became Attorney General. So now you have, now you look at this deal, okay? You have Hunter Biden in the deal, representing the chairman of CEFC as the attorney in the deal. You have a Barr's law firm, King and Spalding, and you have Hunter Biden representing the chairman of CEFC in the deal. You have Christopher Wray, his law firm at the time. He was still at the law firm. Representing Rosneft at King and Spalding representing Rosneft. And then you have Barr's law firm, Kirkland and Ellis. And also, he joined Kirkland and Ellis in 2009, and he served as of counsel for them. In other words, when they got in trouble, Barr represented them. when Kirkland and Ellis got sued, Barr represented them, and then he worked off and on for them for a number of years, but jumped back in full-time in 2017, okay? So Barr's law firm has a piece of this too, Kirkland and Ellis. They're representing a group called Glencore, okay, who was packaging an $11 billion deal, investor stake, in the Russian Federation's Rosneft oil company in 2016-2017. Stuff started in 2016-2017, well before Ray went to the FBI, and well before Barr went to head the DOJ. it's crazy. It really is crazy. So you have, let's just frame this real quick, and then I'll move on to some closing thoughts, basically. If your head isn't already scrambled like mine, you have the two top law enforcement officials really in the country right now. The Attorney General of the United States, Barr, and the FBI Director, Wray, were in on this deal that Hunter Biden was in on, too, with the Chinese and the Russians, okay? The two top law enforcement officials in the United States were tied up in this, or their law firms were. But again, as partners, they make money on this. They know damn well that they were who was involved. At that level, you know who you represent. Who your firm is representing. You don't get blindsided by stuff like this. And then they're sitting, these two are sitting on evidence implicating Hunter Biden and God knows what. A number of financial crimes, potentially child pornography. They're sitting on evidence, rerouting evidence, playing games with a potential criminal case, doing favors for the Bidens. Shouldn't they come out and say, hey, we were like part of a business deal with this guy before we took our jobs here for Uncle Sam, came back working for Uncle Sam. They were both previously with Justice Department before. They don't even say that. They don't recuse themselves from the case. I've talked and talked and talked again about protection rackets, protection rackets, protection rackets. This is it. This is it personified. They don't even tell you or disclose that they were involved in this deal, either directly or indirectly. That's something for the courts to figure out, or something. God, if we had an FBI that was functional from top down, that's something they would figure out, not me. I can't put these pieces together and make them fit. I don't have subpoena power. I don't have financial records. I don't have access to emails and all this stuff. The FBI does. In fact, they're sitting on a whole laptop. Whole hard drive of Hunter Biden. See if I have any final thoughts. Some things I left on the cutting room floor here that I didn't get to since we're kind of breaking this on the fly. Took most of the day to get this together, of course. And I think we did a good job of rustling it up and lassoing it and getting it out to you in a timely fashion. And that's the name of the game. Might not be all pretty, like a great production, but it's raw intel. Is worth its weight in gold. Forget all the shiny bullshit. Give me the intel. It's just crazy, this Ray thing with King and Spalding. And I mentioned before that King and Spalding also represents Gazprom, another massive oil company in Russia, state-owned oil company. When I say by state-owned oil company, it's owned by the Kremlin. It's amazing that this guy could sit on these Russian collusion investigations when he's profited and continues to profit as he has personal money in Russia. And he's known about these deals. How long has he known about Hunter's deal? Since he got in there, right? He's protecting his client, obviously. But so this goes back even further. People are like, the FBI is just learning about this from Bubba Linsky. Really? Because Ray, when he was an attorney in 2017, before he jumped on late in 2017, before he jumped to the seventh floor of the J. Edgar Hoover building to head the FBI, he knew that Hunter was involved in this. All he had to do was read the case file. Okay? Hunter Biden was representing the CEO of CEFC as a personal attorney. They were in negotiations with King and Spalding's client, Rosneft, in a $9 billion with a B, billion-dollar deal, $9 to $11 billion. You know who else knew about it? You know who else knew about it? Presumably is Attorney General William Barr. His law firm was also involved. Everybody's making money. See how the protection racket works? Everybody's making money behind the scenes. Revolving door, private sector back into public sector. Ray doesn't know this. Ray doesn't know that Kirkland and Ellis was getting paid as part of this deal too. Part of the talks. Don't forget, whether a deal goes through or not, the lawyers still make the money for all the lawyering and the legalese and everything else. The lawyers don't care if the deal goes through. They still get paid the same amount of money. So Barr and Ray didn't know about this? They didn't know that Hunter Biden was involved with this stuff? Give me a break. Come on. You're smarter than that, folks. You're smarter than that. I mean, at the same time, like Gazprom, right, another client of King and Spalding. What did I read about them? For Ray, it raises even more conflicts of interest, serious questions. Gazprom representation of by King and Spalding. Gazprom, which is controlled by Ukrainian oligarch Dmitry Firtash. Firtash was under federal indictment at the time that Ray joined the FBI. In Chicago for racketeering charges. What? Guess who was running the case? The feds. It's insane. Firtash is considered to be a member of Putin's inner circle. And Ray's firm, again, represents the guy who also happened to be at the time under federal racketeering charges in Chicago, which falls under the auspices of the U.S. attorney and the FBI. And the director of the FBI was profiting off the money that Gazprom pays King and Spalding. Remember all that money at the beginning I showed you? And that's just, I mean, you could dig even deeper, and we will. We'll continue to look at this. I mean, people are going to say, yeah, but did Ray go to Moscow, and was he working for Rosneft? Missing the point, folks. Above reproach. Did Ray work directly for Gazprom? I can hear it now because it's always the same thing, right? That's not the point. The guy's the FBI director. The other thing is, how did the Senate miss this? They missed it because they're idiots. They don't know how to vet somebody. I can vet somebody better than they can. I just proved it. There's no doubt here. Regardless of profit motives or whatever, this raises massive questions, more massive questions about ethical and legal conflicts of interest by Barr and Ray. And also the fact that did this prior knowledge and prior dealings, high stakes dealings, $9 billion, $11 billion mergers and acquisitions, right? did that play a role in the fact that the FBI hasn't moved, and neither has the Justice Department, has it pressed the FBI to move on Hunter Biden's laptop and on all the other Hunter Biden crimes? Is it really news to the FBI that Hunter Biden had all these side deals going, especially with Rosneft and CEFC? If Ray's law firm was profiting from it, it's... I don't know what else to say. You know, there's a difference between an actual conflict of interest and a potential conflict of interest. It doesn't matter. Both are considered a conflict of interest. This is an ethical minefield as far as I'm concerned for Ray, but I'm sure nothing will happen because guess what? They're all in on it. They all protect each other. And now you have the two top law enforcement officials in the United States involved in this story. Personally, they profited from it, from partner payouts. Did you see the amount of money? So I wanted to show you guys the amount of money that Ray has made. Whether the law firm represents criminals or whoever, he gets a piece. It enriches him. And the fact that he knows that, and the same goes for Barr, the fact that they know this, they should recuse themselves from these cases to, at the very least, avoid the possibility or the appearance of a conflict of interest or an ethical quagmire. They haven't done that. You know why? They don't care. Even if they get caught, and they just did, they don't care. They know that it's so rigged, the system, that they'll just walk away from it. It's not a big deal. I think this is enough to throw Ray out on his ass. And Barr might not be far behind. Now, I know that some folks who shared this with us were also talking to the White House today about it. That's why I wanted to get it out as soon as possible, and we'll put it back out to the general population tomorrow. It's just really crazy. The Russian collusion, Russian interference, Russian investigation. Oh, the FBI was involved in rigging that too. And then the FBI, the special counsel, the DOJ, all involved in investigating it, still are, with the Durham probe. And these guys, Barr and Ray, are in it up to their necks with Hunter Biden. You can't even make this up. You don't think these guys all protect each other? This is just is not happenstance. This is not a coincidence. When there's this much money involved and these big players are involved, there are no coincidences. This is not an episode of Columbo. They all know each other, and this is how they play. I think you're getting a rare peek behind the curtain here of some real, real heavy, heavy deep schemes. And that's why I got back into journalism, to do that. So these guys should all be this should be taken to a federal grand jury. In a perfect world, I'll just say, in a perfect world, this should be taken to a federal grand jury and find out at least why Ray didn't recuse himself with having to do with anything Russia coming through the FBI. And that includes whether he had any direct involvement in quashing this Hunter Biden situation. And there's stuff on that laptop regarding this exact case. What did Ray know? When did he know it? Well, we know. He knew it before he became FBI director. His law firm represented Rosneft in merger and acquisitions. I just spelled that out. So we'll keep an eye on it. I'll spin some of this into the 46 podcast, but the 47 podcast. But you're free to listen to it if you want to, but you basically just got the early shot here of the 47 podcast. You got it before everybody else. So as I say at the end of every show, and we'll be back for more pain. Not more pain, Jesus. We're back from Pain in the Morning tomorrow, and then put the regular podcast out after that, I would anticipate. But we have a long night ahead of us one way or another, so I'm glad we were able to do this show and get it out to you, and I hope it is appreciated. And we will get that podcast out, and hopefully you can share that with the public. But for right now, this is all yours. This is for you to digest. And maybe if you find it worthwhile, you can share at the top of my Twitter. We teased it tonight's show. Maybe you can share that and say to people, hey, it was a hell of a show. And sign on and support these guys, help support these guys so we can keep the lights on. And it's been an uphill struggle lately, so, but that's okay. It's not my first rodeo. We'll be back soon enough, and take care and God bless.